Kevin to share his story, our main speaker.
I'm Gavin, I'm an alcoholic. My hands are kind of shaking, and it's not because I'm drinking. She kind of said my story in 15 minutes. I started drinking young too. For me, it was very much a cultural thing. I come from a large Latin family, and I remember at a Super Bowl party with a great aunt, I was like 6 or 7 years old, so like gave me a little glass of beer. And drinking revolved around kind of all the social events and get-togethers with family, and that was it. I was raised Catholic, and came from a quote good family, and the people I saw around me didn't fit the bill of the stereotypical alcoholic that I'm aware of. I'm the first one in generations that's actually done something about their drinking, alcoholism. And my grandfather was an alcoholic. He got cirrhosis, and it's not what killed him. He blew his brains out. And, he had, anything you'd want in the world. I mean, he, by measure of, society's terms of success, I mean, he had it all, but, it's like it didn't matter. He left the wake too, and that order of shit, by the time, from when I had my first drink to 16, it's like that's when my drinking was controlled, and that's because it was by others who were controlling it. As soon as I was able to drive, I found where to get the alcohol, or I'd take it from the house, and let the games begin. I remember in high school, I was coming back from a friend's house, and I was driving down Fowler, and it was like 56. There's a drugstore on the corner. And that was the first time I got pulled over for a DUI, and I failed the sobriety test, the visual light thing, and told me it was a sheriff. And I'll be honest, because of people my family knew, I was able to get out of multiple DUIs. Like, they would just let me go. It got to the point that it's like, by the time I was in my 20s, it's like, my thinking was so polluted that thought it was like above the, the law and repercussions, and I didn't think I had any consequences for my drinking. But so I got pulled over right there at Fowler and 56, and I fail, and the sheriff tells me, I want you to walk over to the drugstore and get some water and sit here for an hour and drink the water. And then he's like, if I see you on the road before an hour, he's like, because I'm going to be in the area, I'm going to take you to jail. Well, he drove off, and I waited like a little bit, and I had things to do, so it was time to get back on the road. And that was like probably 15 minutes. I discovered cocaine, and I can drink like a beast, and I think that's how I'm intended to drink when I start. And I don't know if I graduated high school either, or if a family member didn't make like a donation. I mean, by the time it came to graduating, I was drinking Saturday, Sunday, and then maybe a day or two during the week. It's like I had friends who were doing it with me, so it's like it's normal. This is what people do. It's like I'm ready to go to college, and so I get accepted to a university, and I'm there for a few years, And I go to my mailbox, and I get a letter inviting me not to return. So from there, I kind of went and started working with some family, and they were teaching me real estate development. So, you know, I did that, and I started working with another guy, and I worked for him for about 6 years or so, 5 or 6 years. And in this time, I also met this girl, and she was wonderful. She was, you know, an awesome pre-Al-Anon person. And we'd go to, like, social things and parties. And I told her, like, early in the relationship, look, if you see me drinking a little too much, you know, maybe pull me to the side, not in front of other people. Tell me, you know, slow it down. Like, that should be a red flag. Like, get the hell away from this person. Yeah, she went along with it. She bought it. And we were hunky-dory. And by the time I was 25, it was like 4 or 5 DUIs that I'd gotten out of. I mean, it was, I didn't see I had a problem. I was the last one to see it, like you hear all the time. And so by that time, it's like I'd binge 5 to 6 days a week, and just like I get drunk as 10 Indians, man. I mean, I was keeping a cooler in the back of my truck, and I had beer in it, and it was on ice, and you know, because I had some other buddies doing the same thing. That's my thing. It's like I really like to push that line where it's like, this is normal, and when, you know, it's like, then I take it up a notch to, like, the new normal. And I used to drink one of my neighbors. He lived at the end of the block, and we were drinking buddies. And, you know, we'd be drinking beers at, like, Rick's on the River. Then we'd go back to his house, have some, you know, more drinks, and, you know, go pick up his kids, come back. Then there'd be some other guys that would stop by, and we'd be like drinking while the kids are playing out in the front yard, and we'd be going in the garage and drinking and doing drugs. And it's like I'm that guy. It's like I feel disgusted with some of the things I've done, and you know, but it's like, meanwhile, it's like I'm telling my wife, look, don't hang out with them. They're trouble, you know. And so I used to go to Rick's frequently, and I used to see these guys, these old men on the other side of the bar who were drinking. It'd be like noon. I'd be there for lunch and like a beer, I'd be dressed like I am now, you know, going to work and stuff. I'd be like, those guys are drunks. And it's the only thing different from me now, from what I can see, is that I was well-dressed. That was it. That was it. I mean, I was the same thing. I may not be sitting there having a pitcher right then, but after work, you know, it's like I get where I drink the night before, and I wake up the next day, and it's like I'm telling myself in the mirror, I'm never doing that again. By 5 o'clock, my truck's on autopilot, and I'm back at Rick's, you know, and that's how life was. And I wasn't a daily drinker until I think it was like October 2010. Went on like a daily binge for like a month. And I was constantly getting sick too. Actually, a couple times I had my wife call into work, tell my, she's so sick, he can't come in. And they'd buy it. And but so I'm on this daily binge, and I'm blowing off work. I may show up to meetings or something, or I may not. I'll show up late, you know, stroll in at 10:30, 11, if I decide to go in. And I start getting these stomach pains on my right side, so I go to walk in, and they're like, we think you have appendicitis. you need to go to the ER. So drive to the ER, and I was shitting blood, and I thought, like, this may be it. Like, I'm done, you know. Not like the bathroom, you know, there's some blood. It's like, no, it's like, it's just no stopping. It just is coming. And so, you know, they get it stopped at the ER, and they pump me full of the dope and stuff while you're in there to alleviate your pain and discomfort. And I didn't DT or anything. You know, I think it was because of the dope. But, yeah, the doctor comes in and sees me, and he's like, you know, are you a heavy drinker? And I look at him, no, socially. You know, and when he left, he probably didn't buy it. But when he left, my wife said, you know, this is the drinking, right? And I was like, yeah, I know. Yeah. So I get out, and I stay dry for maybe a week or so. You know, I mean, if I went dry, it's like I couldn't get more than a week before I'm back in the bottle. And then I start to really deteriorate. But just before that, I was like, okay, maybe the beer and tequila is a problem. Let's try some, you know, vodka martinis. And so, you know, I do that. But then it's like it's getting to the point. I read contracts for a living, but it's like I'm going to read the newspaper because I'm old school and don't like to read it on a computer or phone. And I can't understand a paragraph. Like, I can read it, but it's like I can't comprehend what I'm reading. Like, I'm falling apart. And I know I'm falling apart. So I start going, making appointments with doctors, and I'm kind of telling my family, it's like, hey, there's something off here. That great aunt who gave me a beer when I was really young, she was an everyday drinker, and she ended up getting dementia. And I think some of that may be, there may be a correlation. So I think I'm like the youngest person to ever get dementia. And I go see this neurologist, and he's asking me questions, you know, putting everything on my head and checking me out, scans, everything. And he told me, he's like, you're fine. He's like, do you drink? I said, yeah. He's like, what do you drink? And I tell him, you know, beer, tequila, you know, maybe a little gin. Well, no, I quit drinking gin because it gives me hives. And, you know, some vodka, you know, martinis. And he's like, so you kind of don't have a preference. And it's, well, I guess you put it that way, I can realize now, yeah, I don't. And so he's like, I think you have anxiety and depression. Here's some Xanax. And he's like, you don't want to drink with them. I wish I could tell you I didn't drink with them, but that's just not accurate of, you know, my alcoholism. And from that point, it was like I just drove off the cliff. The suicidal thoughts I was having became very realistic. I remember sitting in my living room drinking, and I'm looking at the revolver. I'm thinking, you know, I could blow my brains out or something. And, you know, I'd be driving down the road and have these thoughts. You know, my revolver sitting in the center console. I was like, I'll just take it out, blow my brains out while I'm driving down. It's like, if you're having those thoughts, that is not normal. It's like, I needed help. And it got to the point where it's like, you know, with everything I was doing, I remember going to a corner store to get some alcohol, you know, that's right on the outside of my neighborhood, and I couldn't remember how to get home. And it's like, I was a wreck. And my wife, she was driving me to the doctor's home because it's like I wasn't really able to drive. And one of the times I go see my doctor, he had treated some family members who were, they were drunks. And he asked me about my drinking when I first started seeing him. I told him. I didn't tell him the extent, obviously. But I told him, listen, I got stuff going on with me. It's like I'm falling apart. If you can't help me, I'm going to blow my brains out. And he took it serious. He knew the history of my family and the drinking and, you know, some of these, you know, the suicide and things. And he got me to see someone that day, like the floor below him. And he tried calling a couple other, I guess, shrinks and the psychiatrists and stuff in that building. But he got me to see this guy. And this one guy, I'll never forget him. His name was Gary Woods. And a psychiatrist, is blind. And, you know, I go see him, and you know, he takes me immediately, and we're talking, and I'm giving him the sob story. No, you know, people don't like me, and you know, I'm a victim, and boo-hoo, all that, you know, nonsense. And he's like, you know, do you think if I could get you help with your drinking, you think you'd be willing to try it? And at that point, he was like, yeah, I'll do it. He gave me a cell phone, called this guy, and I met him. You know, he gave me that little 20 question thing, and I'm an alcoholic. So, you know, I remember walking out of there and left. Walking out of there and, you know, said, we got this thing called IOP. Maybe you can try that, because I wasn't quite sold on going away. 30 days sounded like a long time. Well, IOP wasn't going to work for me. You know, so I needed out of my surrounding. I needed some time to dry out, to, you know. I went to rehab. I was there for like 4 months, and it was the most fun I never want to have again. But it was what I needed at the time. You know, I'm very impressed with people who walk into AA and, you know, do it. I wish I was one of those people sometimes, and but that's not my story. And somewhere between 30, 60 days, I got a sponsor, and they kept saying, you know, you got to get a sponsor. I didn't know what AA was. I had no experience with it, but I got a sponsor, and he must have seen that I was kind of burnt out, because we started reading the big book from, you know, 1 to 164, like you hear about, but only like 2 pages a day. I think it was because he knew I wouldn't be able to really grasp much more than that. So it took a little while. I got through my steps. What you just heard was really kind of like my step one. I was in denial up until that hospital visit. I mean, I knew I was an alcoholic. I just didn't know that there was like a solution. Started doing the steps. I started getting help for some psychiatric problems. I have clinical depression. I'm a big believer in AA. But I do have psychiatric problems, so I need some outside help. And I had some guys in AA tell me not to do it, some older guys. And I think they were fucking wrong. you know, I did the steps in order with my sponsor, got to 4, and, you know, I'm writing it out. And I did 5. And when I was done, it helps because my sponsor, he was a priest, so we had that like Catholic connection. It's not going to go anywhere. But he was also hard of hearing, and like, but I had this weight that was lifted off my chest that I've never experienced in my life. It was amazing. I did the 6 and 7, and I remember I was staying with my aunt because some things were going on at my house, and my wife and my. So if we're saying my aunt, we are having a remodel thing done. And so I got to 8, you know, 9. You know, I said, I'm going to, you know, make these amends. And he's like, yeah, you're going to use the list from your step 4. And I'm thinking, I probably would have made this shorter had I known that. But I had a good experience with my amends. My sponsor had me go through, start off with some easy ones. Kind of, I guess, build up confidence or something, and it worked. I had the gift of desperation, so there's this guy who says, you know, if they told me to go pick pennies up with my ass cheeks in the street, I'd do it. I was there. You know, I was willing to do anything to stay sober, to not drink, not drug. You know, I'm that guy who, I wouldn't do it unless my life depended upon it. That's the type of drunk I am. The first year I probably did, you know, step 10 every day. And then I thought, you know, I'll do some spot checks because those sound real good and convenient for me. You know, prayer, meditation, and, you know, working with others. I honestly got sober January 14th, 2012, and I haven't picked up a drink or a drug, but I can tell you I've been dry a couple times, and I've seen my sobriety suffer because I'm not practicing the principles or applying the steps, and I get into self-will, and sometimes when I was first in AA, I would go to 2 and 3 meetings a week, you know, after I got out of rehab, because I didn't know what else to do. But I knew I felt comfortable, I felt safe there, wasn't going to pick up a drink or a drug. And when I back my meetings down, I get squirrely. I don't know how else to say it, but, you know, meetings, they help me. I went to detox meetings almost religiously for like the first few years. And that, honestly, I never left a detox meeting without feeling better. It's like ground zero, it keeps it green. It's there's something about it. And I like newcomer meetings. You get to hear some of that craziness. And it's like, I can still get that craziness, you know, if I'm not, you know, working my steps and doing what I should be doing. I kind of wish I knew what worked and what doesn't work, you know, but it's like I do these things, it's like it works, and I'm afraid to try other things. Trying, like, not doing them, I'm afraid. When I hear people come back, it freaks me the fuck out that it gets worse, you know, just like the book says. And I'm like, holy shit, if it gets worse, like, I feel like I'm at the tail end of it, and it's like, it's gonna get worse. That scares me. It still scares me. Sobriety, for me, the first year or so was rough. It was ups and downs, crying, you know, all the emotions. It was crazy. I haven't shared this ever before. It was sometime, I think, in my first year. I was having a rough time, and I went to my doctor again. And told him, look, I don't know what's going on, but things just aren't working. I mean, I had done my steps, and, I mean, things were happening, but it's like something wasn't feeling right. So he's like, look, why don't you go to Memorial? I'll get you your own room there. You'll be cool. And, well, I went there, and I voluntarily checked in. I was in the psych ward, and, you know, I found it unnerving when I was in detox in the psych ward, and it's even more unnerving when you realize, it's like, yeah, I may not be the craziest guy here. But so I did that, and I got help, the psychiatric help after that, that I really needed, and, you know, that helped really stabilize things. And so I have a kid, 2013, my wife and I had our first son. It's been great. It's like kind of nerve-wracking, your first one. The second one is less. I have another. We just had a little girl turn one, Josephina. And my life has improved dramatically. It's like there's times where it's like I don't even recognize. I remember this a little bit earlier in my sobriety. It's like, who I, like, am now. Because I also thought, it's like, can I go back to the real estate development? I remember thinking that in rehab. Can I go back to doing this and stay sober? And, well, I found out not only could I go back to doing that, I do it a lot better. I had some tenants tell me this year that, you know, Gavin, we really appreciate you because it's like you're so honest and we can feel like we can trust you. A lot of our other landlords, we don't feel that way. And it's like, that's a product, I think, of AA. I think a lot of the experiences I've had that are positive our results of AA. That little girl who's like 1 year and 3 months now, she, that pregnancy was rough. We were at a cousin's funeral, and we got a phone call. My wife was in the back because my son, you know, they make noise and stuff. They're not always cooperative. They were in the back. I turned to look, and she's not there. So I go look for her, and she's on the phone. I can see her face. We got a call from the doctors saying that that kid was going to have some retardation. And that's a tough thing to hear. And, the girl on the phone, she's not even a doctor. She's like the secretary. I don't know why she's making those phone calls. But it can't give us answers. But they're like, she can do some lab work and we can find out if this is more accurate, you know, maybe a false positive. That was the word everyone kept throwing around, false positive. The blood work was somewhat helpful. So I said, okay, let's take it to the next step. There's a reason behind this story. Take it to the next step. So we go do this, some more testing. Meet the last doctor we see, and he's like, there's some stuff we can do. And I said, what's going to get us to 100%? He's like, when that baby's born. Like, okay, I said, that's it for me. I said, my wife and I discussed it and prayed about it, and turned it over, basically. And that's a healthy baby today. No problems. Well, there's going to be problems, I'm quite sure of. But, that's kind of like program. It's like, I got to get into action. I got to go, do stuff for my sobriety. And, I wish I could tell you honestly, like, everything's peachy. Some days it just sucks. But one of the things I've learned through my sobriety is that when those days happen, the first thought isn't always, pick up a drink, just get my ass to a meeting, or pick up the phone, call my sponsor. When I was hitting bottom was probably, I thought, like the worst thing in my life. It turns out it's been the best thing in my life. AA works, really does. I'm not going to lie. AA, I think, is the best thing in my life. It's given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. I think I got AA. Getting married to my wife, my kids. It's like that's how I think I'd rank some of my top stuff. My wife asked me when I was getting out of rehab, she's like, you gotta promise you're never gonna drink again. And I was like, I can't do that. I can't. I don't know. I do know from what the book said, it's like some of the stuff is contingent on me doing certain things, and I hear this one guy say, it's like vigilance is the price we pay, and I gotta stay active, and I know when I'm all right to go to these social things, or when I probably don't need to be going to them, or my neighbor's this nerdy dentist, and he jams out in a band, and so he plays at all these bars, and he's always inviting us, and it's like before I go out, I like to have a conversation with my sponsor. I like to, try and get to a meeting before I do it. For those things have been helpful for me. I also surround myself with people who I think have better sobriety. I don't know if I shortchanged myself, but when I was first getting sober, I didn't come to YPG. I was afraid to. But I started hanging out with like old timers because I thought, okay, that's the guy I want to make it there. And I think that was helpful. But I do. It's like I wonder sometimes, did I shortchange myself? I also went to a lot of clubhouses. Found out that they can be like revolving doors. But it's like that was a good thing for me to see too. And I don't know why all three of the sponsors I've had. Been big book thumpers, and I don't know. I really like it that way for me. I don't believe everything I hear in meetings, but I believe everything that comes out of the Big Book. I remember the first time I read it, well, I was reading bits and pieces of it because I was burned out in rehab, and it just like, it was the first time I could identify, like reading stuff. I was like, kind of made me wonder. I was talking to another guy. I was like, it feels like people are following me and like writing stuff down. I don't know how they know this stuff, but I don't know. AA has been magnificent to me, and hope if you're new, hope you got some hope. Remember that's what AA gave me, hope. Even when I was here and didn't understand what was going on, I still got some hope out of it. That's all I got. Thanks.